You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're going to head up to the Sierra and take a look at just how much snow these systems have dumped in the mountain so far this year in the early days of January. Last weekend's storm started off as rain, but eventually dropped between 2 to 4 feet of snow throughout the high country. Yesterday, scientists with California's Department of Water Resources reported our snowpack is off to one of its best starts in 4 decades. But as we learned last year, those wet and snowy conditions can become very dry very quickly. So, to put this season's impressive start into context is Andrew Schwartz, lead scientist with the UC Berkeley Central Sierra Snow Lab. Welcome back to Insight, Andrew.
Hi, Vicky. Thanks for having me.
So, how has your new year been, Andrew, up at Donner Summit?
It's been a busy one and one filled with plenty of snow, which is always exciting. And I'm very happy to see it falling outside, actually, as we speak right now.
That's great. Can you start? Just give us an overview of how the snowpack is doing so far this winter.
Yeah, the snowpack is looking terrific this winter. And it, in all reality, it's a little bit weird because last year, at least at the Central Sierra Snow Lab, we were doing better than we are this year. But the big difference this year is that we see a lot of snow down in the Southern Sierra as well. Whereas last year, that area was very dry and wound up being one of the areas that needed the most moisture. So right now, as you've mentioned, we were at about 174%, excuse me, of average, which is just absolutely fantastic.
On New Year's Eve, your lab recorded like this incredible snowfall rate of over 7 inches of snow falling in 1 hour. I mean, are there any other statistics from these most recent atmospheric rivers that surprised you? I mean, that sounds pretty impressive to me as a non-scientist.
Yeah, that was the big statistic that I think shocked a lot of people. We've had a lot of interest from the scientific community about that, too. So, yeah, between 4 and 5 p.m. on New Year's Eve, we actually measured 7.5 inches per hour of a snowfall rate. And for a bit of reference, the storms that hit Buffalo that caused all that damage and did all that created all those issues only had rates of about 3 inches per hour. So we had over double that. So it was very, very substantial rate. So that was one thing. The other thing, too, that was of particular interest to us was how much rain we got. It really saturated our snowpack. And in all reality, when we look at rain on snow events, they can kind of go one of two ways. Either they can really melt the snow and be problematic, or what happened in this case is they can actually percolate through and then refreeze in the snow, which adds additional water to the snowpack. So we kind of benefited from the rain on snow a little bit more than actually was lost to the melt.
Right. There's a range of good and bad snow. And in terms of the snow water equivalent and what we can benefit from in the drier months.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, you hit the nail on the head. We really want to keep an eye on that snow water equivalent. And even though we're looking really, really good with all of our April 1st measurements right now, you know, we're anywhere from about 35 to 60% of average for where we would expect to be on April 1st. You know, those numbers can shrink. It's not like they're set at that and can only go up. So if we get an extended dry and warm period, those can shrink. But with the rain that's come in, with the existing snow, we're looking really pretty good with those snow water equivalent measurements right now.
Not too long ago, just back in the fall, federal climate scientists at NOAA, they forecasted a warmer and drier than average winter for California and the western United States. Yet here we are. Any reason why we're off to a wetter winter than what was forecasted, you know, 3 or 4 months ago?
You know, that's kind of the magical question. And I'll be honest, you know, when I looked at the NOAA forecast, you know, warmer and drier seemed fairly probable. But, you know, we're kind of looking at a similar situation to last year as well. You know, we got this massive storm in October and then a record-breaking December up here. And then we went, wow, well, this isn't the warm and dry winter that we had expected. And then January through March kind of ruined that because we did return to those dry conditions. But so far, you know, it's really complicated and kind of a little bit uncertain when we forecast for our weather during La Nina years, especially through the central portion of the state, because we can either go above average with our precipitation and temperatures or below average. We're kind of in this area of equal chances. So it's a best educated guess on the seasonal precipitation and outlook early in the year. And I'll be honest, I'll be the first one to say it. I am very happy that we were wrong about that so far.
Remind us what a La Nina year is.
Yeah, so when we look at a lot at the weather that governs North America, we tend to look at what we call the El Nino Southern Oscillation, which is a pattern of sea surface temperatures, so sea temperatures off the coast, west coast of South America. And so during different phases, we can get things occurring with our weather up here, because that those sea surface temperatures really govern what's happening along the west coast of the United States. So in a La Nina year, we tend to see cooler than average temperatures off of the coast of South America, and that changes our weather patterns off the coast out here. And in an El Nino year, we see warmer than average water temperatures that'll do kind of an opposite reaction to what we see with La Ninas. So realistically, we've had three of these La Ninas in a row, and of course, we've had some pretty bad drought years already. And so we were kind of expecting another one, but fortunately, again, you know, there's that uncertainty here. So fortunately, we're ending up a little bit more dry than we have been for the last two La Ninas.
How has
or
that,
a little bit more wet, sorry.
Wet, right. And how has that uncertainty evolved or even become further challenged by climate change and these even more drastic pendulum swings in California's weather, which is historically already quite variable?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. California's weather is incredibly variable. And one of the things that really complicates that is the fact that, of course, with climate change, we see increased variability. And so we've also built a lot of our forecasting techniques based off of previous decades of weather before the climate had dramatically shifted. So we're kind of playing this game of catch up where we go, well, in the past, a La Nina would mean this for the majority of the country, but with climate change factored in, it could mean a number of different things. So it does make it a lot more complicated with climate change when we're looking at these patterns. But fortunately, I know there's a number of research organizations across the country that are doing more work on determining how things like our sea surface temperatures really affect our precipitation. And in fact, I've overseen a group of students this last semester, and we're working on forecasting snow quantity amounts throughout all of the Sierra Nevada and their relationship to sea surface temperatures. So it's hard, but there's a lot of good research that's going on to look at it more.
A few minutes ago, we were talking about wind in the valley, and in Sacramento at the airport, it reached a gust of, I believe, around 60 miles per hour. I could only imagine what it reached at the Sierra. I think there were some reports as high as 80 mile per hour winds. Your lab is atop one of those peaks. You're at Donner Summit. I mean, how do these incredibly strong winds impact your work?
It makes things really difficult, to be honest. You know, fortunately, we have a little bit of protection from the trees around us. But when we're out there trying to do daily measurements of snow and we're putting things on our little, you know, our mass balance to actually get the weight of things, it becomes problematic because when winds are blowing around a tube filled with snow, then you're not able to get an accurate weight and we can't figure out how much water's in it. So that's one problem. The other thing, too, is this last storm, we were without power for over 2 days. Because of a tree that came down on top of a power line. We've had trees come down on top of the road this year, so we haven't been able to access the lab at times without getting a chainsaw out and moving them across. So it does become very problematic with those winds. Now, fortunately, we don't record gusts that are quite as high as some of the others in the area. We do still have issues with them, but you know, Palisades, which is just a short little hike away on the ridge tops, have recorded some ridiculous wind speeds this season with these atmospheric rivers of up to 125 miles an hour. So they do impact us, but fortunately not as bad as some areas.
Yeah, certainly. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with Andrew Schwartz, a lead scientist at the UC Berkeley Central Sierra Snow Lab, sharing how the recent series of storms are impacting our state's snowpack. So conditions this winter seem a little similar to late or last year. We got off to a strong start last December when the Snow Lab recorded one of its snowiest months ever, more than 200 inches of snow. But as we all know, that was followed by the driest January through March ever recorded in state history. And by April, the snowpack had just dwindled to well below average. Is there any indication we're in for a repeat this year?
So far, no indication that we'll have that super dry period, which is really fortunate. You know, as we've kind of already established, we're looking at this weather pattern that continues with quite wet conditions over at least the next 7 to 10 days, and realistically doesn't show a whole lot of likelihood that it's going to let off. Of course, beyond that, you know, I'd like to make the broad proclamation that we'll continue above average, but things can change pretty rapidly, right? So kind of the analysis that I've used is that, you know, we've scored a touchdown in the first quarter of the football game, but anybody that watches football can tell you a lot can happen in three quarters, right? So we're really happy. It's not looking like it's going to change. And there's also the benefit that it's a lot more widespread this year rather than hyper kind of localized to Donner Summit.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about drought-like conditions or historic drought that California is going through. I mean, we don't live in a vacuum. I mean, it's also broadly the Western United States. What do you believe it'll take for the state and our region in the country to finally dig out of, you know, the big D word, drought?
Yeah, that's it's kind of a hard question because we have been in drought for so long and we have not gotten so much of the precipitation that we were hoping for. Realistically, you know, there was a statistic that was talked about earlier this year at the Snow Survey Cooperators meeting that said that we were basically a year behind in our annual precipitation. Now, with that being said, we are rapidly making up for that this winter. And the great thing is when we look not just at California, but at the entire Western United States, we are above average in almost every single catchment in that area. And some of these places, most of them, in fact, are above 150%. Some of them are above 200%. So most of the area within the Western U.S. that has been the most drought stricken realistically to this point in the winter has gotten the most precipitation. So that's no guarantee we're going to come completely out of the drought. But if it continues that way, it'll help us at least start to really claw out of it and make a dent in it. Mm.
Over the next 7 to 10 days, since we are in for a lot of snow and rain, what are you most excited to be following and keeping an eye on?
Well, of course, we have this wonderful 2 to 3 feet of snow that we're expecting between today and tomorrow. That's very exciting. And any time last year we talked about 2 to 3 feet, it was an absolute heyday of just excitement and all kinds of buzz up here at the lab. That being said, I was taking a look through the weather models this morning, and it looks like we could be on track next week to see anywhere from another 7 to 11 feet of snow. So that's one thing that we're incredibly excited about, of course, is those massive numbers. It makes us a little bit anxious, too, because then we have to start dealing with potential impacts to the facility when it builds up that much. But if we get that quantity of snowfall, man, talk about a good start to the season.
What impacts the facility are you a little anxious about? Because, yeah, obviously we want a robust snowpack, but, you know, we also, you know, it comes with risks as well.
Yeah, the snow lab's built really well. I mean, it has been here for 76 years since 1946. But when we get these really big storms or really big winters, a couple things happen. First, the second floor of the snow lab actually has to have boards put over its windows because the snow will shatter them if the snow builds up that much. Also, we have to do a lot of clearing of snow from our towers and instrumentation to make sure that they continue to function properly. And then, of course, the big issue is just making sure that we have continued access to the site because we aren't on the road. We have to, you know, hike about 1,000 feet in to get to the snow lab. So when you're doing that in 4 to 5 feet of new snow, it can be problematic. So it's a little bit of just making sure that we're babying the facility to make sure that we don't wind up with smashed windows, but also making sure our instruments go on at the same time.
I know you're a snow junkie. I mean, you wouldn't be a lead scientist at a snow lab at Donner Summit if you weren't. But is there ever a point, when you're surrounded by snow, that you just kind of like imagine being on a tropical island?
Yes, that happens quite frequently. I have in the last few weeks been looking at trips to tropical places for sure. I don't think it'll happen anytime soon, but maybe sometime in the spring.
Well, it's well deserved. You're working incredibly hard. Finally, what do you want listeners? How do you want listeners to think about the forecast over the next 7 to 10 days?
I tend to urge cautious optimism, but I think this is just a moment where we can be very excited as far as how much water is coming in. Of course, you know, we do have to be cautious about things because there is the potential for flooding and landslides and power outages and that things of that nature. But in terms of resolving the drought or putting us in a position where we're potentially able to do that, it's a very exciting time. So let's throw away that cautious optimism for the moment and just be really optimistic.
We'll relish in it. Andrew, as always, thank you for joining us.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Vicky. You have a good one.
You too. Andrew Schwartz is a lead scientist and manager of the UC Berkeley Central Sierra Snow Lab, sharing how the recent series of storms from the past and incoming are impacting our state's snowpack. Up next, the healing potential of psychedelics is gaining attention across the country. We're going to take time to better understand the benefits and risks, as well as learn how a bill to decriminalize them in California could reduce the stigma surrounding mental health. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.